The Phoenix Theater and Arts Company's audio drama series presents Frances Hodgson Burnett's The Secret Garden in 5 parts, adapted and directed by Jenna Isabella. For past episodes, upcoming events, and other information, make sure to visit our website at phoenixtheaterartsco.com. That's theater with an R-E. Without further ado, we give you The Secret Garden, Part 4.
I was not at all happy about how Colin and I had left things the day before, dear listener. I was determined to start my day early once more in the garden with Dickon and then go see Colin without delay. When I got back to the house, Martha met me in the hall.
It's Colin. He's having one of those tantrums the nurse called hysterics. How awful it sounds.
I don't know what to do. I can't bear it. He ought to be stopped. Somebody ought to make him stop. Somebody ought to tell him.
He's worked himself into hysterics. He'll do himself harm. No one can do anything with him. You come and try like a good child. He likes you.
He turned me out the room last night.
That's right. You're in the right humor. You go and scold him. Give him something new to think of. Do go, child, as quick as ever you can.
You stop. You stop. I hate you. Everybody hates you. I wish everybody would run out of the house and let you scream yourself to death. You will scream yourself to death in a minute, and I wish you would. If you scream another scream, I'll scream too. And I can scream louder than you can, and I'll frighten you. I'll frighten you.
I can't stop! I can't!
You can. Half that ails you is hysterics and temper. Just hysterics. Hysterics. Hysterics.
I felt the lump! I felt it! I knew I should! I shall have a hunch on my back, and then I shall die!
You don't feel a lump. If you did, it was only a hysterical lump. Hysterics makes lumps. There's nothing the matter with your horrid back. Nothing but hysterics. Turn over and let me look at it. There's not a single lump there! There's not a lump as big as a pin, except backbone lumps, and you can only feel them because you're so thin. I've got backbone lumps myself, and they used to stick out as much as yours do until I began to get fatter, and I'm not fat enough to hide them yet. There's not a lump as big as a pin. If you ever say there is again, I shall laugh.
I didn't know that he thought he had a lump on his spine. His back is weak because he won't try to sit up. I could have told him there was no lump there.
Could you?
Yes, sir.
There.
Do you think I could live to grow up?
You probably will, if you will do what you are told to do and not give way to your temper, and stay out a great deal in the fresh air.
I'll go out with you, Mary. I shan't hate fresh air if we can find it. I shall like to go out with you if Dickon will come and push my chair. I do so want to see Dickon, and the fox, and the crow.
Would you like me to sing you that song I learned from my ayah?
Oh, yes. It's such a soft song. I shall go to sleep in a minute.
I will put him to sleep. You can go if you like.
Well, if he doesn't go to sleep in half an hour, you must call me.
Very well.
I almost told, but I stopped myself in time. I won't talk, and I'll go to sleep. But you said you had a whole lot of nice things to tell me. Have you... Do you think you have found out anything at all about the way into the secret garden?
Yes, I think I have. And if you will go to sleep, I will tell you tomorrow.
Oh, Mary, if I could get into it, I think I should live to grow up. Do you suppose that instead of singing the Aya song, you could just tell me softly as you did that first day what you imagine it looks like inside? I am sure it will make me go to sleep.
Yes, shut your eyes. I think it has been left alone so long that it has grown all into a lovely tangle. I think the roses have climbed and climbed and climbed until they hang from the branches and walls and creep over the ground, almost like a strange grey mist. Some of them have died, but many are alive, and when summer comes, there will be curtains and fountains of roses. I think the ground is full of daffodils and snowdrops and lilies and iris working their way out to the dark. Now the spring has begun. Perhaps there are clusters of purple crocuses and gold ones even now. Perhaps the leaves are beginning to break out and uncurl, and perhaps the grey is changing and a green gauze veil is creeping and creeping over everything, and the birds are coming to look at it because it is so safe and still. And perhaps Perhaps the robin has found a mate and is building a nest. And before too long, dear listener, Colin was asleep. The next morning, Martha came to tell me Colin was asking for me.
He says he wishes you would please go and see him as soon as you can. It's strange what a fancy he's taken to thee. You did give it to him last night for sure, didn't you? Nobody else would have dared to do it. Poor lad. He's been spoiled till salt won't save him. Mother says the two worst things that can happen to a child is never to have his own way, or always to have it. She doesn't know which is the worst. You were in a fine temper yourself, too. But he says to me when I went into his room, please ask Miss Mary if she'll please come and talk to me. Think of him saying please. Will you go, miss?
I'll run and see Dickon first. No, I'll go and see Colin first and tell him. I know what I'll tell him.
I'm glad you came. My head aches and I ache all over because I'm so tired. Are you going somewhere?
I won't be long. I'm going to Dickon, but I'll come back. Colin, it's something about the garden.
Oh, is it? I dreamed about it all night. I heard you say something about gray changing into green, and I dreamed I was standing in a place all filled with trembling little green leaves, and there were birds on nests everywhere, and they looked so soft and still. I'll lie and think about it until you come back.
And in 5 minutes, I was with Dickon in the garden. The fox and the crow were with him again, and this time he had brought two tame squirrels.
I came over on the pony this morning. He is a good little chap, Jump is. I brought these two in my pockets. This here one, he's called Nut, and this here other one's called Shell.
And when he said Nut, one squirrel leapt onto his right shoulder, and when he said Shell, the other leaped onto his left shoulder. When we sat on the grass with Captain the Fox curled at our feet, Soot the Rook solemnly listening on a tree, and Nut and Shell nosing about close to us, and I told Dickon that Colin has taken such a fancy to him and his animals in the garden. We'll get him to come out, and you shall push him in his chair, and we'll bring him here and show him everything. When I came back inside, I told Colin everything about Dickon and his animal friends, and his strange gray eyes seemed to be thinking.
I wish I was friends with things, but I'm not. I never had anything to be friends with, and I can't bear people.
Can't you bear me?
Yes, I can. It's funny, but I even like you.
Ben Weatherstaff said I was like him. He said he'd warrant we'd both got the same nasty tempers. I think you are like him, too. We are all three alike, you and me and Ben Weatherstaff. He said we were neither of us much to look at, and we were as sour as we looked. But I don't feel as sour as I used to before I knew the robin and Dickon.
Did you feel as if you hated people?
Yes, I should have detested you if I had seen you before I saw the robin and Dickon.
Mary, I wish I hadn't said what I did about sending Dickon away. I shouldn't mind Dickon looking at me. I want to see him.
I'm glad you said that, because...
Because what?
Can I trust you? I trusted Dickon because birds trusted him. Can I trust you for sure?
Yes. Yes!
Well, Dickon will come to see you tomorrow morning, and he'll bring his creatures with him.
Oh!
That's not all. The rest is better. There is a door into the garden. I found it. It is under the ivy on the wall.
Oh, Mary! Shall I see it? Shall I get into it? Shall I live to get into it?
Of course you shall see it. Of course you'll live to get into it. Don't be silly.
It is just what you thought it would be. It sounds just as if you had really seen it, you know? I said that when you told me first.
I had seen it, and I had been in it. I found the key and got in weeks ago, but I didn't tell you. I didn't because I was so afraid I couldn't trust you, for sure.
It was lovely that Colin would finally be going outside and into his mother's garden. Oh, but don't forget, Mary, Dr. Craven was called for after Colin's tantrum. I will never forget the conversation I overheard.
How could I forget? He was rather irritable, and he went right to Mrs. Medlock when he arrived.
How is he? He will break a blood vessel in one of those fits some day. The boy is half insane with hysteria and self-indulgence.
Well, sir, you'll scarcely believe your eyes when you see him. That plain, sour-faced child that's almost as bad as himself has just bewitched him. How she's done it, there's no telling. The Lord knows she's nothing to look at, and you scarcely ever hear her speak. But what she did, none of us dare do. She just flew at him like a little cat last night and stamped her feet and ordered him to stop screaming, and somehow she startled him so that he actually did stop. And this afternoon, well, just come up and see, sir. It's past crediting.
When he saw Colin and I sitting in his room discussing flowers and our plan for the garden, I never thought we could have shocked a man more.
Those long spires of blue ones, We'll have a lot of those. They're called delphiniums.
Dickon says the larkspurs, made big and grand. There are clumps there already.
I'm sorry to hear you were ill last night, my boy.
I'm better now. Much better. I'm going out in my chair in a day or two if it is fine. I want some fresh air.
Let me feel your pulse and have a look at you. It must be a very fine day, and you must be very careful not to tire yourself.
Fresh air won't tire me.
I thought you did not like fresh air.
I don't when I am by myself, but my cousin is going out with me.
And the nurse, or Mrs. Medlock, of course.
No, I will not have them. My cousin knows how to take care of me. I am always better when she is with me. She made me better last night. A very strong boy I know will push my carriage.
He must be a strong boy and a steady boy, and I must know something about him. Who is he? What is his name?
It's Dickon.
Oh, Dickon. If it is Dickon, you will be safe enough. He's as strong as a moor pony as Dickon.
And he's trusty. He's the trustiest lad in Yorkshire.
Well, well, if it amuses you, perhaps it won't do you any harm. Did you take your bromide last night, Colin?
No, I wouldn't take it at first. And after Mary made me quiet, she talked me to sleep, in a low voice about the spring creeping into a garden.
That sounds soothing. You are evidently better, but you must remember.
I don't want to remember. When I lie by myself and remember, I begin to have pains everywhere, and I think of things that make me begin to scream because I hate them so. If there was a doctor anywhere who could make you forget you were ill instead of remembering it, I would have him brought here. It is because my cousin makes me forget that she makes me better.
Dr. Craven had never made such a short stay after a tantrum. When he talked to Mrs. Medlock in the library, she felt that he was a much puzzled man.
Well, sir, could you have believed it?
It is certainly a new state of affairs, and there's no denying it is better than the old one.
I believe Susan Sowerby's right. I do that. I stopped her in her cottage on my way to Thwaite yesterday and had a bit of a talk with her, and she says to me, "Well, Sarah Ann, she mayn't be a good child, and she mayn't be a pretty one, but she is a child, and children needs children." We went to school together, Susan Sowerby and me.
She's the best sick nurse I know. When I find her in a cottage, I know the chances are that I shall save my patient.
Yes, well, she's got away with her, that Susan. I've been thinking all morning of one of the things she said yesterday. She says, "Once when I was giving the children a bit of a preach after they'd been fighting, I says to them all, 'When I was in school, my geography told the world was shaped like an orange, and I found out before I was 10 that the whole orange doesn't belong to nobody. No one owns more than his bit of a quarter, and there's times that seems like there's not enough quarters to go around. But don't you, none of you think that you own the whole orange, or you'll find out that you're mistaken, and you won't find it out without hard knocks. What children learns from children, she says, is that there's no sense in grabbing the whole orange, peel and all. And if you do, you'll likely not even get the pips, and them's too bitter to eat."
She's a shrewd woman.
Well, she's got a way of saying things. Sometimes I've said to her, "Hey, Susan, if you were a different woman and didn't talk such broad Yorkshire, I've seen times when I should have said you were clever."
Next morning, I ran into Colin's room to tell him spring is here, and Dickon had found a newborn lamb. We began to eat our breakfast together when Mrs. Medlock came in and Colin couldn't help but cry out.
"A boy and a fox and a crow and two squirrels and a newborn lamb are coming to see me this morning. I want them brought upstairs as soon as they come. You are not to begin playing with the animals in the servants' hall and keep them there. I want them here. I'll tell you what you can do. You can tell Martha to bring them here. The boy is Martha's brother. His name is Dickon, and he is an animal charmer. Mary, when do you think Dickon will come?"
"Listen, did you hear a call? That's Soot the Rook. Listen again. Do you hear a bleat? A tiny one? That's a newborn lamb. He's coming."
"If you please, sir, here's Dickon and his creatures."
And we three were so merry with all the animals. Colin even cradled and fed the newborn lamb. By the time the lamb fell asleep, questions poured forth and Dickon answered them all. He told them how he had found the lamb just as the sun was rising 3 mornings ago. He had been standing on the moor and listening to a skylark and watching him swing higher and higher into the sky until he was only a speck in the heights of blue. And when we looked at the pictures in the gardening books and Dickon knew all the flowers by their country names and knew exactly which ones were already growing in the secret garden.
"I could not say that name, but we call that a columbine, and that there one, it's a snapdragon, and they both grow wild in hedges, but these are garden ones, and they are bigger and grander. There are some big clumps of columbine in the garden. They look like a big bed of blue and white butterflies fluttering when they're out."
"I'm going to see them. I am going to see them."
"Aye, that you must, and you must not lose time about it.
I think it was about a week before we were able to get Colin outside in the chair. Mrs. Medlock had lots of organizing to do.
Things are changing in this house, Mr. Pitcher.
Let's hope they're changing for the better, Mrs. Medlock.
They couldn't well change for the worse. And strange as it all is, there's them that finds their duties made a lot easier to stand up under. Don't you be surprised, Mr. Pitcher, if you find yourself in the middle of a menagerie and Martha Sowerby's Dickon more at home than you or me could ever be.
He'd be at home in Buckingham Palace or at the bottom of a coal mine. And yet it's not impudent, either. He's just fine, is that lad.
Here is Mr. Pitcher, Master Colin.
Oh, you are Pitcher, are you? I sent for you to give you some very important orders.
Very good, sir.
I am going out in my chair this afternoon. If the fresh air agrees with me, I may go out every day. When I go, none of the gardeners are to be anywhere near the long walk by the garden walls. No one is to be there. I shall go out about 2 o'clock, and everyone must keep away until I send word that they may go back to their work.
Very good, sir. My word! He's got a fine lordly way with him, hasn't he? You'd think he was a whole royal family rolled into one, prince, consorts and all.
Well, we've let him trample all over every one of us since he had feet, and he thinks that that's what folks were born for.
Perhaps he'll grow out of it, if he lives.
Well, there's one thing, pretty sure. If he does live and that cousin stays here, I'll warrant she teaches him that the whole orange does not belong to him, Susan Sowerby says, and he'll be likely to find out the size of his own quarter.
Dickon went back to the garden with his creatures and I stayed with Colin while we waited for him to get ready to venture outdoors. Dr. Craven dropped in to inspect him. The strongest footman in the house carried Colin downstairs and put him in his wheelchair near which Dickon waited outside. After the manservant had arranged his rugs and cushions, he waved his hand to him to go. Dickon began to push the wheelchair slowly and steadily until we came to the spot. This is it. This is where I used to walk up and down and wonder and wonder.
Is it? But I can see nothing. There is no door.
That's what I thought. That is the garden where Ben Weatherstaff works. This is where the robin flew over the wall. And that is where he perched on the little heap of earth and showed me the key. And this is where I went to talk to him when he chirped at me from the top of the wall. And this is the ivy the wind blew back. And here is the handle. And here is the door. Dickon, push him in. Push him in quickly. And Colin drank it all in. Here and there, everywhere, were touches and splashes of gold and purple and white, and the trees were showing pink and snow above his head, and there were fluttering of wings and faint sweet pipes and humming and scents, and the sun fell warm upon his face like a hand with a lovely touch, and in wonder Dickon and I stood and stared at him. He looked so strange and different because a pink glow of color had actually crept all over him, ivory face and neck and hands and all.
I shall get well. I shall get well! Mary! Dickon! I shall get well! And I shall live forever! And ever and ever!
And so Colin sat and breathed the fresh, clean spring air and watched as Dickon and I worked in the garden. He wondered what other marvels he would behold in the garden. When suddenly we caught sight of him, the flash of red-breasted bird with something in his beak.
Look at that robin. There he is. He's been foraging for his mate.
He's taking her tea to her. Perhaps it's 5 o'clock. I think I'd like some tea myself.
It was magic that sent Robin Dickon. I know it was magic, but you see, dear listener, both Dickon and I had been afraid Colin might ask something about the tree whose branch had broken off 10 years ago, and we had talked it over together, and Dickon had stood and rubbed his head in a troubled way.
We couldn't never tell him how it broke, poor lad. If he says anything about it, we must try to look cheerful.
But I had not felt cheerful when I gazed at the tree. I wondered and wondered in those few moments if there was any reality in that other thing Dickon had said about Colin's mother.
Mrs. Craven was a very lovely young lady, and mother, she thinks maybe she's about Misselthwaite many a time looking after Mr. Colin, same as all mothers do when they're taken out of the world. They have to come back, you see. Maybe she's been in the garden and maybe it was her who set us to work and told us to bring him here.
I felt that magic was working all afternoon and making Colin look like an entirely different boy. It did not seem possible that he could be the crazy creature who had screamed and beaten his pillow. Even his ivory whiteness seemed to change. The faint glow of colour which had shown on his face and neck and hands when he first got inside the garden wall really never quite died away. He looked as if he were made of flesh instead of ivory or wax.
I don't want this afternoon to go, but I shall come back tomorrow, and the day after, and the day after, and the day after.
You'll get plenty of fresh air, won't you?
I'm going to get nothing else. I've seen the spring now, and I'm going to see the summer. I'm going to see everything grow here. I'm going to grow here myself.
That you will. We'll have thee walking about here and digging same as other folk before long.
Walk? Dig? Shall I?
For sure you will. You've got legs of your own, same as other folks.
Nothing really ails them, but they are so thin and weak. They shake so that I'm afraid to try to stand on them.
When you stop being afraid, you'll stand on them. And you'll stop being afraid in a bit.
I shall? Who is that man? Look! Just look at him climbing up that ladder!
What are you doing in there? Poking around where you aren't wanted?
Ben Weatherstaff! Ben Weatherstaff, it was the Roman who showed me the way.
You bad youngin! Laying your badness on a robin! Him showing you the way? Him? However in this world did you get in?
It was the Robin who showed me. He didn't know he was doing it, but he did. And I can't tell you from here while you're shaking your fist at me.
Wheel me over there. Wheel me quite close and stop right in front of me. Do you know who I am? Answer!
Who are you? Aye, that I do. With your mother's eyes staring at me out of your face. Lord knows how you've come here, but you are the poor cripple.
I'm not a cripple! I'm not!
He's not. He's not got a lump as big as a pin. I looked and there was none. Not one.
You haven't got a crooked back?
No!
You haven't got crooked legs?
Come here. Come here, Dickon. Come here this minute.
He can do it. He can do it. He can do it. He can. There was a brief, fierce scramble. The rugs were tossed on the ground. Dickon held Colin's arm. The thin legs were out. The thin feet were on the grass. Colin was standing upright. Upright, as straight as an arrow and looking strangely tall, his head thrown back and his strange eyes flashing lightning.
Look at me! Just look at me, you! Just look at me!
The lies folk tells. You're as thin as a lath and as white as a wraith. But there's not a knob on thee. You'll make a man yet. God bless thee.
Dickon held Colin's arm strongly, but the boy had not begun to falter. He stood straighter and straighter and looked Ben Weatherstaff in the face.
I'm your master when my father is away, and you are to obey me. This is my garden. Don't dare to say a word about it. You get down from that ladder and go out to the long walk, and Miss Mary will meet you and bring you here. I want to talk to you. We did not want you, but now you will have to be in the secret. Be quick.
Aye. Lad, aye. My lad. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Go and meet him. I can stand.
I told you that you could as soon as you stopped being afraid. And you've stopped.
Yes, I've stopped. Are you making magic?
You're doing magic yourself. It's the same magic as made those crocuses work out of the earth. Aye, there couldn't be bigger magic than that there. There couldn't be.
I'm going to walk to that tree. I'm going to be standing when Weatherstaff comes here. I can rest against the tree if I like. When I want to sit down, I will sit down, but not before. Bring a rug from the chair.
And when Ben and I came through the garden door, Colin was standing by the tree.
Look at me! Look at me all over! Am I a hunchback? Have I got crooked legs?
Not you. What have you been doing with yourself? Hiding out of sight and letting folks think you are a cripple and half-witted.
Half-witted? Who thought that?
Lots of fools. The world's full of jackasses braying, and they never bray naught but lies. What did you shut yourself up for?
Everyone thought I was going to die. I'm not!
Sit yourself down on the rug a bit, young master, and give me my orders.
What work do you do in the gardens, Weatherstaff?
Anything I'm told to do. I'm kept on by favor. Because she liked me.
She?
Your mother.
My mother? This was her garden, wasn't it?
Aye, it was that. She was very fond of it.
It is my garden now. I am fond of it. I shall come here every day, but it is to be a secret. My orders are that no one is to know that we come here. Dickon and my cousin have worked and made it come alive. I shall send for you sometimes to help, but you must come when no one can see you.
I've come here before when no one saw me.
What? When?
The last time I was here was about 2 years ago.
But no one has been in it for 10 years. There was no door.
I'm no one, and I didn't come through the door. I come over the wall. The rheumatics held me back the last 2 years.
You came and did a bit of pruning. I couldn't make out how it had been done.
She was so fond of it. She was. She was such a pretty young thing. She says to me once, Ben, she says laughing, if I'm ever ill, or if I go away, you must take care of my roses. And she did go away. The orders were no one was ever to come nigh. But I come. Over the wall I come. Until the rheumatics stopped me. And I did a bit of work once a year. She gave her order first.
I'm glad you did it, Weatherstaff. You'll know how to keep the secret.
Aye, I'll know, sir. And it'll be easier for a man with rheumatics to come in at the door.
With the new knowledge that this was his mother's garden, and with the confidence he gained from walking the few steps to the tree, Colin reached and held the trowel I had dropped. He dug several scoops of earth out, and I whispered to myself, "You can do it! You can do it!" And Ben handed Colin a small plant.
Here, lad. Set it in the earth yourself. Same as the king does when he goes to a new place.
It's planted! And the sun is only slipping over the edge! Help me up, Dickon. I want to be standing when it goes. That's part of the magic.
And Dickon helped him, and the magic, or whatever it was, soon gave him strength that when the sun did slip over the edge and end the strange, lovely afternoon, he actually stood on his 2 feet, laughing, having planted a small tree in the secret garden.
PTAC's audio drama series is a production by the Phoenix Theater and Arts Company. This week's episode, The Secret Garden, Part 4, was written by Frances Hodgson Burnett, directed by Jenna Isabella, and edited by Gina Stanton and Jenna Isabella. This episode features the vocal talents of Amanda Booth as Mary Lennox, Gina Stanton as Martha Sowerby, Devin Traeger as Deacon Sowerby, Emma Berkowitz as Colin Craven, Judy Brewster as Mrs. Medlock, Sean Latessa as Ben Weatherstaff and Mr. Pritchard, and John Isabella III as Dr. Craven. Original PTAC music by Brian Sanishin. For a full listing of credits, visit us at phoenixtheaterartsco.com. That's theater with an R-E. While you're there, please consider clicking the donate link. That would be delightful. Have comments or questions? Email us at phoenixtheaterartsco@gmail.com or find us on social media. A very special thank you to our Patreon subscribers, with a shout out to those sitting in the box seats, Ken Shelby, and onstage seating, Margaret Thurston. We couldn't do this without you. Join us next time for The Secret Garden, Part 5.